Yasya-vanyava-samsthanai kalpito-loka-vishtara tanvai-bhagavato-rupam vishudam-sattvam-orgitam. So here, Sutta is talking to, Sutta Goswami is talking to the sages headed by Shonaka and everybody, and he's answering their questions. And of course, one of the questions is, please describe the different incarnations, their significance, like that. So this chapter is incarnations. Yeah? In the last chapter, he answered most of the questions, what is the essence of Dharma, and what is the best scripture? I think that Nidhi was mentioned. In the end, it will be mentioned in this chapter also as the literary incarnation of God. And he discussed Dharma in the last chapter a lot, and because many people think that Dharma, or as you call it, religious activities, occupational duties, are meant for sense gratification, and not for getting out of this world. But actually, it's the exact opposite, he explains. The only purpose of doing your occupational duties, going to university, starting to become a lawyer, becoming a judge, is actually to understand what is the absolute truth. It doesn't change. And the absolute truth can be understood in three phases, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So all that was answered in the last chapter, very profound. And this chapter then is talking about how Krishna incarnates in this material world and how we can understand the transcendence through different incarnations. So this translation is, it is believed that all the universal planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purusha. But he has nothing to do with the created material ingredients. Yeah. His body is eternally in spiritual existence par excellence. Okay. So I mentioned the word Kalpita, which Prabhupada translates before as imagination, and here it is said believed. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The conception of the Virat Rup or Vishva Rup of the Supreme Absolute Truth is especially meant for the neophyte who can hardly think of the transcendental form of the personality of Godhead. To him, a form means is something of this material world. And therefore, an opposite conception of the Absolute is necessary in the beginning to concentrate the mind on the power extension of the Lord. So for us, that's a very important phrase. And the Virat Rup is the power extension. As stated above, the Lord extends his potency in the form of the Mahat Tattva, which includes all material ingredients. The extension of power by the Lord and the Lord himself personally are one in one sense. At the same time, the Mahatma is different from the Lord. Therefore, the potency of the Lord and the Lord are simultaneously different and non-different. Simultaneously different and non-different. The conception of the Virat Rup, especially for the impersonalist, is thus non-different than the eternal form of the Lord. The eternal form of the Lord exists prior to the creation of the Mahatattva. And it is stressed here that the eternal form of the Lord is par excellence spiritual or transcendental in the modes of material nature. The very same transcendental form of the Lord is manifested by his internal potency. And the formation of his multifarious manifestations of incarnation is always in the same transcendental quality without any touch of the Mahatattva. Wow. Prabhupada can die. So this is the earlier, I think someplace earlier, there's a little mention of this, not much, about, I guess we call it cosmology or physics. What is this? What is the nature of the universe and the cosmos? In philosophy, we have what? We have epistemology. How can you know? Ontology. What is actually knowable? And praxeology. What do you do about it? Ethics, morality, Gandharva Veda, music. And so this is more or less ontology. What is knowable? What does that? What actually exists? What illusions exist? And so, to our understanding, this is important because all of Gandharva Veda, Ayurveda, Vastu Veda, Dhanda Veda, and music and fine arts, architecture, medicine, political sciences, they're all based upon these fundamental principles. Right now in our Bhakti Bhai Baba program, we're writing the study guides and everything for the last part of the third canto. Actually, we're just finishing now. And again, it's discussed there. So this part of the creation is discussed just a little bit, how it goes from Mahavishnu to the different, what do you call them, Lila avatars, pretty much like that. So it's five verses discussing this level with the Purushas, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. And after that, it will start, it will go to the Kumaras, and then Nishabdev, Atri, Narayana Rishi, Dandantari, Krishna, Balaram, Nishimadev, Varaha. So these are mostly Lila avatars or Shakyavesh avatars, empowered Jiva souls, like that. And I don't think it mentions any, maybe at the very end, I think it mentions Yuga avatar, it mentions Kalki. At the very end, I'll mention Kalki, but he's not a, he's also not a Yuga avatar. He's the cleanup man. Yeah, at the end of Kali Yuga. So no Yuga avatars are mentioned, as far as I know. And also, I think even the Runa avatars are not discussed here. Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. Okay. So this is the beginning. And then after this, it will go into, let's see what happens next. Oh yeah, why, it's such a big book. It's a literary incarnation of God. But why did Vyasadeva write it? And that's the background, the history, the purpose. And then in the second canto, we'll start with Sukadeva Goswami's inquiries. And most of those are just practical human level devotion and service at the beginning. In this second time around, chapters 5, 6, and 7, then it starts a discussion between Brahma and Narada. Of course, Maharaj Pariksit wanted to hear this. That's why it's there. And then Brahma is the engineer for the universe, and Narada asks him, what is it, text number 326, no, 2522. 2522. He asks him please to describe the whole universe and the energy of the Lord. So he begins to describe the whole thing with this description of the level of the Mahatattva, the Yuga, and the Purusha avatars. But then he goes down within each universe into the production of the elements and mind, intelligence, false ego, earth, water, fire, and ether.
Maharaj, you back? Okay. We just lost connection. He lost connection temporarily for some reason. Oh yeah, now trying to come back.
I'm sure he's got to come back quickly because he should have a good connection. Where is it?
Right. Everybody's here. Skype doesn't have problems yet. Everything fine. It's just he lost connection. But I see he's lit up, so.
How many people are in Skype?
We have 4. It doesn't show my whole window, but.
Are you trying to call him back? Because he might not be aware that he dropped.
You think so?
Yes. Oh, definitely. Definitely. That's what happened last time. He didn't notice that he dropped.
Okay.
You have to, yeah, put him in the conversation.
I'm calling. Now, in the meantime, I wanted to ask devotees if anybody needs screen or can I can I take it down?
I think you can take it down for me.
Okay. No, his connection, something's wrong with his connection. I tried to call him, but it doesn't come. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hello. Hello. What point did we get disconnected?
You were just describing about the verse, I think it's 522,
okay.
About the universal form, and then it just got cut off. So you've been off for about 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay. So what I was doing was just describing how this description of the cosmos is described in different chapters like that. So in the beginning, what do you call it, in 252, Brahma starts to explain it, starts to answer Narada's question. And he gives a description of this creation at the level of the Mahatattva, the Purusha avatars. But then he goes also into the further creation of the individual elements, like that. And then later on, later chapters, he describes the same thing by what it feels like to be the Virat Rupa, what he feels like. He wants to taste, he wants to smell. And I think it describes it again in terms of that the demigods are situated in different parts. So pretty much by the time we finish the second canto, there's a pretty detailed description like that. But it's introducing a lot of new concepts and different things, which to somebody who's a follower of the Vedas, like Maharaj Parikshit, will probably not be all that unusual, all that new. You know? But for us, it's a whole new cosmology. We used to atoms, molecules, quarks, charm quarks, or something, you know. Yeah. The devotee yesterday, of course, was talking about this, speculating on this, which is what they do. So, at the end of the second canto, give the example, like you grow up with somebody, some boy, you grow up, maybe somebody play together and fight and, you know, apologize and, you know, then you start experimenting with drugs together and, you know, and then trying to go through these moral crises of talking to your parents about it or not. And you start dating and all these things. So finally, maybe he goes off to the Iraq War and you stay in America. And when he comes back, you're meeting him and he seems so happy, a nice party, homecoming party, all your friends are there. So maybe somebody asks him, hey, you know, show us some of these martial arts things you learned. Mm-hmm. And so he's a little embarrassed. He says, oh, come on, it's just like, you know, it's in Vietnam and I'm not here. You know? And so Arjuna was pushing Krishna to show this power extension. And Krishna didn't want to do it. And so finally he says, okay, Hanta, which I think means buddy. Okay, buddy, I'll show you. You know? So he shows his power extension, which is the universal form, like that. And Arjuna's hair is standing on end, his blood's running cold in his veins, and everything else. You know? So that's what it's like. It's for somebody who doesn't really know the more intimate qualities of somebody. And they're so used to that. They're so external. Actually, I ran across this, this tryout for, you know, Sally Boyle. Sally Boyle, she was trying out for Britain's Got Talent. You know? And it was just interesting because everybody thought she was some kind of imbecile and have to tolerate her dry out. But then suddenly, wham, the whole thing just changed. And if you look on the internet now, there's something like, I don't know, 20 million hits or something on different things. It's very interesting. And the song she sings is very much, could be very much in Varaha or Radharani like that, maybe with the potency. But looking at it, the thing wasn't that she just didn't have a good voice, tonally. Or she wasn't actually not very good looking in terms of like a glamorous model. It was, you know, very kind of plain looking lady, solid. But then everybody was appreciating, but no, she has internal character. And she has a real, she responds to things from a very deep, substantial level. You know? So that's the real qualities we're looking for in Krishna. And we can respond to which make everybody change. Amazing. Yeah? The audience there, the judges were like, as soon as she started singing this, you could see everybody's eyebrows going up and the audience standing up and on. So can you maintain it? Can you just do it just for a moment? Or the whole song is that way. Then after that, can you maintain it in the fame of, in the face of fame and prosperity? So these are the real qualities we're looking for. But a neophyte needs these power extensions, you know, to appreciate them. And to some degree, I guess, we do, you know, to see Krishna, because we're attached. I don't want to be run over by an automobile today like that. And my ribs crushed, you know, and blood coming out of my mouth and breathing. You know. So, but also I think from experience that I can, coming to the point where I can take shelter of the holy names, you know, the mental platform, subtler planetary systems. So that's one of the first points that the sages, they're kind of tired of hearing about these lower things. So at the end of the second canto, they ask, please tell us about the meeting of Vidura and Maitreya. Because they discussed higher things. Okay? So the higher things they discussed were Krishna's pastimes in Mathura. Krishna already explains his incarnation in the second canto as Vishnu. Ahameva Samaiva Gre Nanya Yat Satasakaram. But he explained something more intimate until he talked to Uddhava when he was about to leave. And Maitreya heard that. So the sages of Namasharani wanted to hear. Because some people believe that Krishna's incarnation in Mathura and Dwarka are like a lesser incarnation of Vishnu. Krishna is a Hindu love god for people who are too passionate, too lusty, like that. But the real form is the majesty of Narayan. So Krishna's explaining, no, these are my more intimate forms, they're eternal. In Mathura and Dwarka. She wanted to hear that. So third canto, Vidura meets Maitreya, but he doesn't ask about that because he's shy to go right to these higher topics. And because also maybe other people are present, for everybody's benefit, he wants to start off with these basic principles. Mm-hmm. So then again, Maitreya explains the creation to Vidura, and then during that, of course, is creation of the Manus and Kapila, and then Devahuti and her Gita, Devahuti Shiksha, which is about 9 chapters. Very beautiful. We're going through them now. I'm just beginning to really see how he answers certain questions, and she asks certain questions, and beginning to see the logic of the class by which she achieved perfection. And again, part of that, he explains that that's 326.9. He starts to explain this. And there's this level is just the beginning. Mahavishnu is there. To me, it's also to all of us who are doing this, reading this. And, you know, some people are PhDs in hydrology, others are engineers, you know. To build bridges that have to stay up. A lot of very, you know, practical people. You know? So trying to get a practical understanding of how Krishna, Mahavishnu, engineers the universe is, you know, is quite a thing, you know. But to lay it out as we understand it now, I understand it. Mahavishnu is in the spiritual world. He's right on the level of Shantaras. You can have a rasa with him. You can't have a rasa with Garbhadaksha Vishnu or Shuradaksha Vishnu. So therefore, it's not a stable position. These are only partial expansions of him. But Mahavishnu is Satchit Anananda. If Ananda is Mr. Shantaras, that's how great he is. Okay. So the material energy is always existing, even when there's no material worlds, but it's in a non-manifested form. Just like, for example, maybe I have a bunch of yarn, so that yarn can be a sweater, but it's not going to be a sweater until somebody manipulates it. So that's the material energy. It's called pradhan at that point. And then he lies down in the causal ocean, and out of his pores and his breathing come all these little tiny, you know, drops of perspiration. We have a shirt on when we're perspiring, then it gets wet, you know. So little tiny drops, how big are they in our breath and coming out of the pores in our body? And how many universes are there then if each one of those is a universe like that? You know? This is the power extension. You know? Feel lucky, kid? Yeah. So Mahavishnu is big. And then it's talking about the Mahatattva. But the Mahatattva is kind of strange. It appears that it's kind of a general manifestation of the pradhan as it becomes prakriti throughout all the universes. It's not like exactly like a wave that comes out and the universes exist within it, but it's like, you know, that's, for example, like you have 20 goats and you say there are goats here. So it's not that goats is like a general thing. Goats is the quality of the individual goats like that. So seeing the Mahatattva is the aspect of the Lord Prakriti as it exists in each universe coming out of the body of Mahavishnu. Okay. Now, Mahatattva, Prabhupada calls it the sum total of intelligence sometimes, but later on, Buddhi is also described as intelligence. Yeah. Charaka, one devotee is doing a comparison with the Ayurveda on this, and Charaka kind of dumps the Buddhi intelligence and only talks about Mahatattva as intelligence. So it's true, but it's just different focus. Okay, so then for the Mahatattva, in the beginning it's also pretty much the same unmanifested thing. But each universe is there, and the elements are there, maybe a little more consciously. And then Garbhadaksha Vishnu enters into each universe, and time comes there somewhere right along with him. Time is the external manifestation of the Paramatma. So Garbhadaksha Vishnu is also a Paramatma sometimes. But he's the Paramatma of the total material ingredients. He makes them alive. He makes fire burn. Okay? And then Shiradaksha Vishnu, who we usually call Paramatma, is the Paramatma of all the individual living entities and the individual atoms. So kind of like prison warden and prison guards. And they're both, you know, there to watch after the prisoners inside the prison. So the causal, the Garbhadak ocean, which is some kind of like, you know, it's ontological ocean, you know, of like cause and effect, feeling and everything else comes out of his body. He rests on that. And then out of his navel comes Brahma. Okay. So before this, the creation by Vishnu is called Sarga. And when Brahma takes over, it's called Visarga. So the Virat Rup, the universal form, it kind of manifests the same time as the lotus flower coming out of the navel. Okay. With the 14 worlds. seven talas, atala, sutala, pala, tala, tala, vitala, bore, bhuvan, swa, the earth, the sky, and the heavens, mahar, loka, jana, loka, tapa, loka, and funny brahma loka. So that's the 14 worlds. There are other descriptions too, but that's common. And each of these is a different level of consciousness. But right now, I'm in our Neo's office on the Hillcrest Avenue, which is under the control of the city of Murfreesboro, which is under the control of the county sheriff of Rutherford. Because I'm in control here. But if a city cop shows up, then he's in control. And then if a county sheriff shows up, the cop says, okay, you're the boss. If a state trooper or a highway patrol guy shows up, then the Rutherford County Sheriff hands it over to him. And if a federal marshal shows up, they all back off to the federal marshal. But if Barack Obama shows up, everybody takes their hats off and says, yes, sir. And then, I don't know, over Barack Obama, who's the United Nations or something. I guess theoretically there is. That's the whole point. The U.S. has submitted itself to specific control of the United Nations, which people didn't like. So, we're here. We're in Brahma Loka. We're in Mahar Loka. We're in Indra Loka. We're in, Bhumandal. When our consciousness is proper, then we're in connection to that. We're not absorbed in the movie show. We can actually eat our popcorn. We have enough consciousness to talk to a friend about the show. So these different planetary systems are not just, earthly planetary systems. They're also systems of subtle material elements, subtle gross elements, and also psychological elements. So this whole Mahatattva, the next stage of differentiation appears to be the Hiranyagarbha, the golden seed, the golden egg, and it's described different places. And that's like the effulgence of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, as his navel and his lotus flower. And it's just like if Bill Gates shows up here, if I see a car park out on our next door street here and two more security cars and I recognize Bill Gates, or maybe I could recognize him. He's walking up to the door here. I think I would try and get my shoes on. I have my shoes off now, but I think I would try and get my shoes on. Take my bath towel off with my guest chair and a little office here. And sit and say, yes, hello, are you Bill Gates? He says, yeah, I'm Bill Gates. And you're Hanuman Swami, right? Yeah. So mind if I talk? We talk a little bit. Oh, sure, Bill, come in. Let me get a little chair for your friend. So everybody knows that this guy's got effulgence. And what do we think about when we think about Bill Gates? Money. First thing I'd be thinking is like, does he want to make an investment in our nonprofit educational corporation? But I'd be surprised if he said, I was passing by here and I wonder if you had any Maha Prasad or something. Can we chant a couple rounds together? Or I really have trouble with my kids. Can you give me some advice? So everybody has their effulgence. So that appears to be what the effulgence of the Hiranyagarbha is. Now on that comes the Bharat Roop. The Bharat Roop is actually this manifestation where this general effulgence of power and stuff. It's where Bill Gates actually has Bill Gates' city. And where's that place? Redmond? Not Redmond. It's in Seattle. And he bought some land. Microsoft has, I don't know what it is, like 20,000 employees or something. And how many of those, of course, maintain their own families? So how many people are part of the Microsoft economic world? Maybe like, in subsidiaries, maybe 40,000 people. So he's a vaishya. He's a duke, a baron. What does he do? Count would be 10,000 people, maybe. So he's like a duke. A duke. And in charge of four counties. Big guy. So they have their own place they built there, their own city, you know, they call office space. And I think it has like maybe like 20 streets, you know, co-processor way, or something like that, Microchip Avenue. And they're all systematic. And all the buildings, mostly as I've seen them, are all like, was it three-story? Like the little square things, all identical. So if you look at it from the sky, it looks like a motherboard or something like that, you know? Yeah. And so that's the Virat Roop. That's how his effulgence then manifests as physical structures. And I guess talking about it that way, the idea comes to mind that Bill Gates must have a mentality pretty much similar to the buildings and stuff he creates, you know, like that. I don't know what kind of sense of humor he has, like that, you know, and jokes and stuff. Maybe he's one very, very dry, you know, rigid guy. Or maybe he's behind it all. He really is a real joker, you know. Do you see that in his product? Do you see that in Microsoft Word? I tried to write the cow, he was doing this. And the automatic spell checker, grammar checker, came back and told me, no, the cow, it was doing this. Because, see, the cow's not a person, the cow's a thing. Wow. So different things are embedded in the Virat Roop. And they tell us something about the person. One thing in general, it seems that people are beginning to appreciate that God must have a sense of humor. We don't talk about this. The Jews, I've seen Jewish people, rabbis and stuff, making this point that you Christian guys are so dry that actually amongst Jewish tradition, there is a lot of joking with God. Isn't it? I always think of a zebra. And the zebra was created to be perfectly camouflaged in its environment, right? Yeah. Nobody can see me like that. Maybe if he's walking around in a black and white movie, he might disappear, but in any place else, he's completely been obvious, you know? Something, it's such a strange, you know, situation. It's got to be a joke, you know? So, okay, and then what do we got? The Virat Roop. And then the elements along with that are also created somehow or other simultaneously. There's that. I guess those are related to the planetary systems. Ahankar, Bodhi, Manas, Bhumirapa, and Lower Bayou. And the demigods each relate to those. There's a planetary system, a species, different species of life relate to different elements of different planetary systems. Okay. And demigods, devatas, who, as we understand, these are their bodies. All the fire in the universe is the body of the 49 fire gods. You know, 49 fire gods. And so they're everywhere. Wherever there's fire, they're there. It's part of their body. Just like our body has so many cells, bacteria, that all depend upon us. You know, like that. It's my body. But what if all the cells decided to separate and go different directions? Hey, guys, come back. Yeah. But rules and regulations give us the authority. So basically, that's our understanding of the cosmology. And here it's making this point of a chinta beta beta tattva. We're also doing the Song of Solomon now. It's our next project, maybe for next year. Last year was Hamlet and Arjuna. This year was Socrates and Maharaj Pariksit, how to die. And very universal response in all these universities in South America and Radhika and Garuda here. But now we're going to try and do, next one will be the Song of Solomon. And the Song of Solomon, there are many commentaries, okay? And old commentaries when the Christian tradition had philosophers and yogis, you know. Yeah. And so looking at that, you see very nice parallels. Yeah. The same thing, whether you put ice on the fire in Russia or United States or Japan, Africa, the same things are going to happen. The ice will become water, the water will become steam, like that. Yeah. So same way, if it's actually a science, you should expect the same experiences by sincere people in Christian, Muslim, and Buddhists, traditions and Hindu traditions. And so that's what we see. And it gives people on this preliminary level faith that, yeah, religion is a science. And then beyond that, the Song of Solomon really goes into tasting it, which other things don't. Hamlet, Socrates, a little bit. And that's what people really need. They have to actually see, no, these are real things. A young man, a young woman can aspire to these things. They can dedicate their lives to these things. And real experiences to talk with other people about them, you know, to mature them, to grow them, to contribute to the ever-expanding, you know, spiritual world. Okay? So that's what we're thinking of for next year, the Song of Solomon. But St. Bernard, he has a whole series of lectures on these. I read about two, three out of five or seven. And so it's very amazing how you can match them up with our explanation. But one of the things he talks about is exactly this point of the Chinta Beta Beta Tatma, that you may say it's blasphemous to say God has lips, because the Song of Solomon says, kiss me with the kiss of your lips. But he goes back and says, hey, let's start trying to kiss the feet. You know, we've been such rascals, it's all we deserve. And if we get that, we should be so grateful. So Sambandha. Then he says we're a little more trusted and fixed. And the master gives us some service and we thank him, kiss his hand and say, thank you, sir, thank you, I'll do it. And then finally the intimacy, and he doesn't so far go into conjugal or paternal, but he just calls it great intimacy, is a kiss of the lips. Okay. So, but he says, you may say that this is blasphemous, talking to his contemporaries, to say that God has hands, feet, he's all spirit. And so he goes into an explanation which looks like a very good explanation, saying, you know, Chinta Beta Beta Tattva. To deal with us, he has to have things he can relate to. But they don't contaminate him, they don't limit him. Just like the example I always remember was when I was a young man, we had manual steering wheels. It was before power steering. And they always warned you to kind of keep a loose grip on the steering wheel, because if you hit a rock or something, that would make the wheel jerk to the right, and that would make it pass all the way back to the steering wheel, and it could snap your wrist, break your wrist. And it happened to people, you know. So you've got to be a little careful. You realize you're holding on to a very powerful machine. You know? But power steering, then there was no problem with that. You know? So kind of like, this is the situation. Jehovah has power steering. Allah has power steering. Mahavishnu has power steering. So when they deal with the material world, it doesn't react on them. They only act on it. Unless they wanted to react on them in terms of the devotee using it in the intimate relationship, you know. And it says, too, that Krishna becomes disturbed when people blaspheme him like that. So it's a very subtle limit, I think, there between which, you know, how God is completely detached and how much he's involved in the material world and sacrificing himself, the story of Jesus, you know, sacrificing himself to actually come in and deal with us, you know, like that. Subtle area. But the general idea is to just that he's, this is his energy. He knows what's happening. If I pull even one hair on anybody's body, a pair of tweezers, they'll notice it and they'll complain. So if you pull even one blade of grass out of the ground, Krishna will notice it. And he'll complain and ask you, what are you doing? Like that. Yeah? So at this point, here today is that Krishna is dealing with this material world through his power extension, so we can relate to him in the unified stage, but he's always transcendental. Okay. Okay, that's our wild diatribe. Any comments, questions, complaints? I hope everybody's still there.
Viola here, Maharaj. Just one second, give me just a minute. Okay, Viola muted right now. Please, if anybody has comments or questions.
Maharaj, I would like to ask a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you very loud and clear.
I have two technical questions, if you don't mind me asking. They're not exactly have to do with devotional service, but about the universal form, just trying to understand it. First question I have is, I understood that Lord Brahma, his body, is the universe. So it's like he is the soul of the universe, and then the super soul of the universe would be Shri Dakshai Vishnu. So I wanted to see what you had to say about that. And then the other thing is that you mentioned about, like, for instance, the demigods, they have these powers where, I forget how many expansions you said, of the fire god, I think it's like 29 or something like that, 27. Whenever there's fire, that's actually their body throughout the universe. It was kind of like the first time I read the Krishna book, I had never heard before that mountains and clouds, oceans, etc., were actually living entities. And it, believe it or not, it kind of bothered me about how could a cloud be a living entity. The reason is that if you have a single cell, amoeba or something like that, it's enclosed within like a package. And then you have multi-cells, trillions and trillions of cells, like our bodies. But still, there's a starting point, an ending point. It can move in space from one location to the other. Whereas something like, let's say, fire, that you just gave an example about. So whenever fire is manifested, that's the body of that demigod? I'm misunderstanding.
Yeah, just for example, like on our skin, we have microphotography of your skin, and they're little worms, tubular motile beasts, tiny little guys, different species too. And they crawl around your skin, they have a good time, they eat all the dying skin. And they nibble on that when it's dying, and they drink water out of your sweat glands. So if you just... it's look at that level. Yeah, there's a whole thing on your skin. Every time you wash it, you destroy many of them. They regrow and that. And again, I don't think they how they breed. I guess they I don't know. It's more than my top of my head. So anyway, so some of them, they may decide, okay, we're down here on Ramananda's hand, and we're going to cut across his shirt and go all the way up to his neck. And we'll discover another body. We'll pack up, big canteens of sweat and head off, adventurous guys like that. So for them, it looks like a different body because they're passing on this external level. But somebody with more intelligence knows how internally it's connected like that. If you go under the sleeve, you find it's actually connected. Or again, you may see water, springs bubbling up here and there. And you think, these are disconnected sections of water. But if you know under that, they're connected. Same with electricity, cell phone. Right now, we're all talking individually. But somebody who knows how to manipulate the fire element, like that, in prana, he knows how it's all connected like that, and invisibly. But tactilely, it's connected. So the different fire gods, their bodies may be, 49, I think. And they've got one may be the fire in the stomach. There's lists of them. And the fires in the ocean. So all the fires and all the stomachs, in a subtle way that we don't know, are all under the same, essentially the same guy. So is that okay?
Sorry, it took me a while to unmute. Yes, thank you. And then about Lord Brahma?
Other thing too is the main prayer, the Purusha Shukta prayer, is Sahasra Sirsha, Sahasrapat, Sahasraksha. You have thousands of hands, thousands of eyes, thousands of ears, thousands of stomachs, thousands of fires. But that's the Virat Rup. That's the prayer that's being to him. And that's what people know as God. And then Brahma, Again, his example is like the most trusted prisoner. Some guy in the prison is really trusted, acting properly. He knows how to, you know, to cheat. He knows how to cheat like, in a way that's not illegal, you know, like a lawyer and stuff like that. Yeah. It's kind of Brahma, too. He still has some independent desire, usually. Okay. So the elements are all created by Vishnu, Sarga. And then he creates the planetary systems. It's kind of like, you know, somebody takes the thread and makes, you know, different kinds of cloth out of it, different colors, and they give it to him, and he cuts it for the exterior of the jacket lining, the sleeves, you know, that kind of stuff, and then different ribbing materials. So Brahma, that's what his position is. You're coming from him, and how much control over each one he maintains after they come from him, I don't know exactly. But as far as I know, he's only attached to his body of knowledge. His body of intelligence, his perspective on things. And he can cast off different mentalities, just like we can cast off, you know, our shirts and stuff. He can cast off a mentality of being Bob Smith or, you know, whatever, an American, or put it on. Just like an actor can do this also. Mm-hmm. So, and as far as I understand, he's like conscious of three quarters of the universe. Three quarters of the universe, his intelligence extends over it like that. So in the matter of creation, it says he's almost like the super soul. And that's why he begins to think of himself as an independent God. So that's okay?
Again, it takes me a while to unmute. I had never heard that before, about three quarters consciousness of the universe.
Yeah, I think I'm taking that from the Krishna book where Lord Brahma is offering his prayers to Gopal. Like that. But other places, yeah, it says, in the matter of creation, he's almost the same as the super soul.
Far up.
Practical point is that we go on chanting Hare Krishna, and the Kapila Dev section, Prabhupada says Kapila Dev section is, philosophy is completely bona fide, just like Lord Chaitanya's, two incarnations, but he says that the Lord Chaitanya's is practical, whereas Kapila Dev is not. But taking some of it and using it to develop, reinforce, guide our bhakti yoga is, probably speaking, essential. To discriminate between my stomach and my heart and the different elements, the mind, and my mind and my senses, like that. So to that degree, chanting Hare Krishna and appreciating the drum beats, you know, the drum feelings, the sound, and japa chanting, the tongue, the mind, the intelligence, we can actually begin to discriminate these things. And we can realize that all these thoughts that I'm having, good or bad or whatever, because of my intelligence, my attitude. And I've really got to work on my attitude. How can I do that? Of course, the best time is early in the morning goodness, during the Brahma Muhurta. That's the best time to work on your attitude and really sing these songs in terms of the guru and then the kirtan, tulsi, meditating. Really work on it. Really work on it to get your attitude back in line after Maya Devi is. I twisted it out. Dreaming has twisted it. I'm a servant of Krishna. What am I serving? How can I? Okay. An attitude. And with a good attitude, then we can build up a whole structure of different thoughts, ideas, like that. And experience all these things, actually, the predominant in deities to some degree. Yeah.
Maharaj, I have another question, but I'm going to wait to see if... anyone else would like to ask? You can get back to me if you have time.
Am I muted? Because I think I got muted before. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, good. I just had a sort of an anecdotal, humorous comment. Maharaj, you were speaking about the little tubular entities in the skin, covering our skin, eating here and drinking there. I remember back in the early 70s, we were having a discussion at the temple about all the different living entities that preside within our body, in our intestine, for example. The flora there is actually quite important. We wouldn't be able to digest without all the different living entities, the bacteria that help break things down. All throughout our body, there's so many, countless living entities. So I remember one day during this discussion, Don Mohan asked Kridananda Maharaj, he said, "So Maharaj, does that mean that we are the presiding deity of the body?" And with his classic humor and wit, Kridananda Maharaj said, "No, we're the presiding fools of the body." I thought that was
jolly.
I'll never forget that comment.
Yeah. But that's it, huh? Brahma becomes a fool and doesn't understand Krishna. Indra becomes a fool. And then Krishna wakes him up, you know. And then he becomes a predominating viceroy. Viceroy.
Yes, of course, that's the point. If we don't understand Krishna, if we have this body, this incredible apparatus, this great form to realize Krishna, if you don't use it to become Krishna conscious, then we are clearly presiding full of the body, more foolish than any of the other living entities within our body.
Wow. And even more foolish are the yadus. That's what Buddha says. Buddha said everybody blew it, but the yadavas blew it worse than anybody.
Right.
They were sitting right with him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of them, you know. Some of them were worse off than anybody because they had lunch with Krishna and still couldn't figure out who he was. You know? Everybody else just saw him on CNN. Mm-hmm.
It's all the other living entities in the body. I mean, ultimately, they're working their way up. They're working their way karmically to eventually rise up to the human form. But now we've got the human form and we're wasting it, therefore, with the presiding fool of the body. All the others are rising and we're falling.
It's Maya's job to create a whole, you know, whole civilization where people can get a human body but not take advantage of it. You know, it's right in your hand. They just don't use it. You know, she's such a good servant. Wow. Shadi Sunda. Wow. So, Mr. Ramananda, you have another question there? Here, there, wherever you are.
In the verse, it describes that the universal form of the Virata. I don't have it in front of me, but it's described as being it's imagined, imaginary. That is because it's only temporary, whereas the material elements, you know, the pradhana, it's eternal. But the Mahatattva is temporary, and therefore it's imaginary. Even though it's Krishna's form, but still it's imaginary form because it's not eternal. Is that correct?
I would say that that's part of it. But also, not just because of the part of it, because it's temporary, but even the form itself is kind of like, well, as the prophet said in another place, that the Virat Rupa is the, how's it go, the objective material incarnation of Krishna. So the prophet says, of course, Krishna never becomes a material object. Yeah, like that. Yeah. So in that sense also, to imagine that the blades of grass are his hair, the clouds are the hair on his head, he's the fragrance of the earth. That's even more gross. Taste of water among as many as the monarch. So even to imagine this is not completely correct, but it's a good approximation. It takes us in the right direction. So in that sense, because it's temporary, that also is kind of distorted. You know, Krishna, his hair, like the clouds in the sky, okay? But his hair is different than that on his body.
Okay, yes. I'm sorry. Oops, I interrupted. Sorry. There's an announcement going on. Because we had just read last night in chapter 17, I think it was verse 3, how the same thing in this purport, that the Virata Purusha is especially important for the neophytes, specifically the impersonal. And Srila Prabhupada says that in the purport that they imagine the Virata Purusha and it philosophizes Vishnu. He didn't really give an explanation there, but that's what he called. Philosophize Vishnu is the universal form. Any comment on that?
Imagine. No, philosophy probably taken there is exactly this. It's speculation, imagination, like that. You know? And, of course, we take Aristotle, who comes into the Western culture, and his logic and mathematics and numbers and that kind of stuff. If you look at the whole fundamental principles of mathematics and that kind of stuff, and you see there's a certain kind of logic, a certain way of looking at it, you know, that storm. And that's it. It's a certain kind of speculation, certain public calls or, you know, that using different things, forms, void set theory. You know, things can be grouped together. Groups can be isolated from each other. And you just have to think about it very fundamentally. And connectivity, and it goes to numbers. Can you count things, you know, like that? Can you fall in the same category? So you can have, you know, 5 pineapples and 2 oranges. You know, like that. So that's all this philosophical middle speculation. Grammar is part of that. Algebra. You know. And then, so we're picking Vishnu, and then trying to put in these categories like that. Yeah. And again, it leads us to the personal form.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I guess it's 11:38 here in beautiful downtown Murfreesboro. Today the sun is shining, not so depressing. The fast break espresso drive through coffee shop across the street out of business again. It opens and closes. And a few cars go through for a fast espresso. You know, kind of a lower income business area there. But it's nice. That's a place to work. And so anyway, we're here, and I guess we'll be able to hopefully just connect up and participate. The class yesterday was very nice, very satisfying. Somebody asked, was it... not hard about different kinds of religions. And I was just thinking that that's the whole Bhagavatam, basically. Because the Bhagavatam talks for people who are into different religions, of sun god worship, you know, different incarnations, different avatars, different saints. But then it comes to show, by very careful analysis, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. And so that's why, at least in that perspective, the Bhagavatam deals with that. It's talking about different levels of religion. Next instruction, Prabhupada says, only those who are interested in the service of Lord Chaitanya can understand Radha Kunda, like that. So even different, you know, sampradayas of worship Krishna have different perspectives. And then the arguments come. And Chaitanya tries to move them. Which is superior, conjugal ras or vatsalya ras? Balabha sampradaya, I think, says that the love of mother's love is greater than the wife's love. And other cultures also support that. The idea is know that the love of the wife is greater than the love of the mother. I want to argue that one out. My mommy loves me more than my wife. So, but that's what it begins to get into. That other question, it will give such an explanation and a comparison of the completeness. One thing, too, though, is that having a system, Mormons have a pretty developed system, you know, about how to do it. And amongst different Catholic groups, you'll find also different groups have different sadhana. As Hindus in general, you know, haven't got a lot of system necessarily. But we as a part of Hinduism have a very specific system. Other Hindu groups also do. For example, in the Jesuits, what's his name? Ignacio Loyola, who started them, has a whole sadhana thing that's supposed to take place over like 7 days or something, you know. But those days can extend quite some time for practice and purification. And it's definitely supposed to be done with the guidance of when a mature person knows how to do, guide you. And so the people just, they've just forgotten this. Maybe they haven't got the higher perspective to get the real taste out of it. And it's called Yuga. So we need the mercy of Nitya Ananda. So in general, I want to thank everybody. And please bless us in our Sankirtan. And we hope everybody also is very successful in their Sankirtan. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Well, about you.
Yes, sir. We'll see you very soon.
Oh.
Arigato.